You're about to watch what we call an extended clip of the Young Turks. And the reality is it's somewhere in the middle. It's a little longer than our YouTube clips, but it's actually shorter than the whole 2-hour show, which you can get if you're a member. You can get it ad free and make sure you catch every news story we do that day. You're going to love it as a full show. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Thanks for watching. All right, welcome to the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. Another amazing day of news, chock full of them. Couldn't stop it if we tried. So more Steve Bannon, Donald Trump cuckfight. In terms of that story, there's actually two parts of it that's a little bit late in the show. I'm going to start with big parts of it in a second. But in the second hour, you're not going to believe the story about how Donald Trump tried to sleep with his friends' wives and what he did to try to sleep with them. Unbelievable. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about conservative reaction. Whose side are they taking, Steve Bannon's or Donald Trump's? That's a great, amazing story. Wait till you see the Fox clips and the Alex Jones clips. They're going to be amazing. So every story in this today's show is unreal. Okay, let's go over here and get started. So Michael Wolff's book is coming out a little bit earlier than expected because people are talking about it nonstop, of course. It's called Fire and Fury. It's about the inside story of Donald Trump's White House. Like the knuckleheads that they are, they just let this reporter come in and sit in there for 18 months during the campaign and then during the White House. And you know how he got in, by the way? He wrote one flattering piece about Donald Trump, and especially on the cover of the magazine, Trump thought he looked good, so he's like, okay, I like this guy. Yeah, let him sit in and hear all the meetings and say you have him talk to all my advisors. What a terrible idea, as usual. So Wolf goes in there in Wolf's clothing and talks to all the different staffers, obviously most famously Steve Bannon, but it is not just about Bannon. When you read the entirety of the comments that are being made, I'm not even going to get to the stuff that was revealed yesterday and all the things about the how stupid Donald Trump is and Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka, etc., that we already talked about yesterday. These are all new comments now. So let's get to it, because the overwhelming sense you get from everyone around Donald Trump is they're stunned by how stupid Donald Trump is. So Sam Nunberg, one of his trusted advisors, who yesterday we read you the quote about how he came in and tried to teach Donald Trump the Constitution, because Trump doesn't know it at all. And he said he couldn't make it past the Fourth Amendment. His eyes started rolling in the back of his head. And Nunberg apparently at one point said about Trump, quote, he's just a fucking fool. That's a Trump advisor. We're not anywhere near done. Apparently, Rupert Murdoch and Trump talk all the time. Murdoch wants to have influence over him. But once he hangs up, Murdoch apparently said about Trump, quote, what a fucking moron. Beginning to get a sense of how these guys feel. Just getting started. Here's an excerpt from a piece that Michael Wolff put up on the Hollywood Reporter. For Rex Tillerson, he was a moron. For Gary Cohn, he was dumb as shit. That's his top economic advisor, by the way, saying that about him. For H.R. McMaster, his national security advisor, he was a hopeless idiot. For Steve Bannon, he had lost his mind. So anyone who comes in contact with Donald Trump goes, man, that guy's stupid. That's unbelievable how stupid he is. Here's more. To say that no one was in charge, that there were no guiding principles, not even a working org chart, would again be an understatement. What did I tell you was his defining characteristic? Even before he took office during the campaign, we did the Loser Donald segments, because his defining characteristic is he's incompetent through and through. He went bankrupt 6 different times. He got bailed out by his dad every time. The guy couldn't manage his way out of a paper bag. He went bankrupt running a casino. How do you lose money when you're the house? The house always wins, unless you're Donald Trump and you're a fucking moron. So I told you he was stupid. An org chart, he wouldn't know an org chart if it hit him across the face. He'd be like, well, what's an org? Is that in Lord of the Rings? What is that? No, it's organization. You're supposed to have organization when you're running the country. Okay. More, reigning over all of this was Trump, enigma, cipher, and disruptor. How to get along with Trump, who veered between a kind of blissed out pleasure of being in the Oval Office and a deep, childish frustration that he couldn't have what he wanted. Now, that's the second theme throughout, a child, as you're going to see in a second. One time, Trump comes into office and he's complaining that he got nothing done. Think about, look in the mirror, dumbass. So anyway, he's going around to his staffers and says, quote, I want to win. Where's my win? Oh my God, what a child. What an unbelievable child. Okay, we're only halfway through. Here's more. He was, in words used by almost every member of the senior staff on repeated occasions, quote, like a child. In one scene, Katie Walsh, formerly a deputy chief of staff, is quoted as saying that dealing with Trump is, quote, like trying to figure out what a child wants. Walsh disputed that account Wednesday to an Axios reporter. It's, look, these are, he talked to 200 people. He was sitting in the White House. He said, I couldn't believe that they let me just sit in whatever room I wanted, pretty much. And so he's like, then people would keep coming up and talking to me. That same Katie Walsh left within a couple of months. And as Michael Wolff correctly points out, in any other administration, if your deputy chief of staff leaves that early, that'd be a huge story. Like, wait, is there chaos and disorder in the White House? Why is this really important person leaving that quickly? You should join the parade. I mean, Spicer and Priebus and Scaramucci. Nobody even remembers Katie Walsh. Who's Katie Walsh? Because the whole place is on fire. It's a dumpster fire. Katie Walsh. So did she think, like almost every senior staffer, that he was like a child? Of course she did. Of course. It's part of the reason why she got the hell out. So when Donald Trump was asked earlier, this was before the blow up, about Steve Bannon's influence, because Saturday Night Live kept ribbing him, saying that President Bannon was really in charge. Oh, and I got under the child's skin, and he is, of course, throwing temper tantrums. And he apparently said, Trump did, how much influence do you think Steve Bannon has over me? Zero. Look, a rational person would say, yeah, I've got a lot of advisors. Steve's one of them. I talk to him every once in a while. I take his counsel. You see, the president, of course not. I'm the president. Instead of going, zero, where's my win? Oh, Jesus, this guy, most powerful guy on earth. God help us all. God help the planet. So Steve Bannon, remember, his chief strategist at the time that he's giving these quotes. This is not after they had a rift and now Steve Bannon's mad at him. This is while he's at the White House that he's talking to this reporter. He's described this way. Steve Bannon was openly handicapping a 33.3% chance of impeachment, a 33.3% chance of resignation in the shadow of the 25th Amendment, meaning that he is unqualified and incompetent, mentally incompetent for office, and a 33% chance that he might limp to the finish line on the strength of liberal arrogance and weakness. Here's a guy who helped get him elected, wanted him to succeed. On another occasion, Bannon said that Trump had the mentality of an 11-year-old. All say the same thing, monumentally, shockingly stupid, and the temperament of a child. Final quote for you guys. My indelible impression, Wolf says, of talking to them and observing them through much of the first year of his presidency is that they all, 100%, came to believe he was incapable of functioning in his job. That right there is the sad state of affairs in the United States of America. That's our president. God help us all. Okay. And you know, every once in a while you guys write into me and say, you know, what kind of agnostic are you? Keep talking about God. I know there's no God coming to the rescue. We're screwed. Okay, just understand that. So the only thing that might come to the rescue is the 25th Amendment. The guy is literally mentally incompetent, not just incompetent in business, incompetent in management. He is mentally incompetent. He needs to be removed from office. This guy should not be making decisions for himself, let alone anyone else, let alone for the country. Okay. Now, let's go to his reaction.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So Donald Trump sees that Michael Wolff's book is coming out, Fire and Fury. He's the idiot who let Michael Wolff into the House in the first place, into the campaign, and into the White House because Wolff had written one flattering article about him. So easy to trick Donald Trump. Now he has accurate quotes that are backed up by audio tape recordings. So Trump is furious. It's harder to call it fake news because it's all on tape. And it's all out of this is corroborated in over 200 people that Michael Wolff talked to, and he was in the meetings, he was in the room. So hard to refute it and hard to call it fake news. Of course he calls it phony anyway, but mainly he's just trying to shut him up. So he goes, I got it, I'll sue him. You're the president, people are allowed to criticize you. That's insane. And he's mad at Steve Bannon too, and he's trying to shut him up, so he does this. A lawyer representing President Trump sought Thursday to stop the publication of a new behind-the-scenes book about the White House that has already led Trump to angrily decry his former chief strategist, Stephen K. Bannon. I've never seen a president do this. You hurt my feelings, I'm going to sue you. I don't want you to say those bad things about me. The legal notice addressed to author Michael Wolff and the president of the book's publisher said Trump's lawyers were pursuing possible charges, including libel in connection with the forthcoming book, Fire and Fury, Inside the Trump White House. Now, a couple of reasons for this. One is, this is Donald Trump 101. He is a bully in terms of the law. He likes to use whatever little money he has to bully others into submission. He doesn't have to be right. He just says, oh yeah, I'll just drain you of all your money and your resources by suing you to death. It's ridiculous charges. Overwhelming majority of the time, he's laughed out of court, but that's not the point. He's going to put lawyer costs on you. He's going to inflict pain on you as strike back. This is what he's done over and over and over again. And by the way, he's threatened to sue almost everyone during the campaign. And even while president, he hasn't actually filed any of those lawsuits. He's just trying to intimidate them. There's a second reason. The lawyers also seek a full copy of the book as part of their investigation. In other words, these bumbling fools, the reporters have the books already, but they're so incompetent at the White House. They're like, how can I get a book? Can anybody get a book? I don't know, let's sue them to get the book. For God's sake, go to a local bookstore. They have the books, find a way to get it. So he's trying to get the book through the lawsuit. He's so sad. They're gonna release it early anyway. It doesn't matter, you'll get to read it tomorrow. Okay. Late Wednesday, lawyers for Trump sent a cease and desist letter to Bannon as well, arguing he violated an employment agreement he signed with the Trump Organization in numerous ways, and also may have defamed the president. They ordered that he stop communicating either confidential and or disparaging information and preserve all records in preparation for imminent legal action. As I told you, he's threatened imminent legal action against the New York Times, against the women who accused him of sexual harassment or assault, against almost all of his political opponents. So far he hasn't followed through because he has no case. The one thing that he has an interesting point on is, apparently Bannon signed an employment agreement where he said he wouldn't disparage the president or talk about what happened at the White House. That's a logical thing for people at the White House to sign. So Bannon apparently violated that. Are we surprised? Like Bannon, the leader of the alt-right, the leader of the deplorables, didn't follow through on his word? He signed something and decided not to follow through. That is like number 137 on Steve Bannon's problems. So look, I would love it if they went to court and ripped each other to shreds. But the second part of that claim against Bannon is preposterous, defaming the president. Well, you're not allowed to critique the president, especially if you're sitting next to him and you think he's an absolute moron and a danger to the country. It's about the only thing Steve Bannon's ever done right. So no, likely he will not actually follow through and file the suit. If he does, he will most certainly lose on almost all grounds. This is yet another bullying attempt by Donald Trump. And as usual, it will be a spectacular failure. Everyone will read everything in that book, and we're already talking about it nonstop. You can't put that genie back in a bottle. The fact that he doesn't understand that proves the book's central point, which is that he is monumentally stupid. Okay, I think that was clear. We're moving on. I've got so much more on the book. I'm going to give you one more story in this segment here. If I could find the quotes I'm looking for, it's coming. There it is. All right, here we go. So the new book by Michael Wolff, Fire and Fury, has a thousand amazing anecdotes and nuggets and information in there. I go on and on. There's so many things we're not getting to. Like he was considering John Bolton, who was a terrible neocon, loves war. He was considering him from a really important cabinet position. But according to Bannon, quote, Bolton's mustache is a problem. This was reported previously. That's why people are not making as big a deal about it. But it confirmed again that he was picking cabinet members based on how they looked and their facial hair. Oh my God, Jesus. So that was part of it. He considered Mitt Romney, even though Mitt Romney had said terrible things to him during the campaign, because he looked the part. And he said he picked James Mattis and some of the other generals because they looked like they were out of central casting. It isn't a show. It's not a reality show. You're the president of the United States. Okay, but on to Russia, which is much more important. Now, part of the reason he wound up not picking Romney and picking Rex Tillerson instead is because Rex Tillerson was the CEO of ExxonMobil, and they had a giant deal with Russia, which was blocked by the sanctions under Obama. So this is fascinating. Michael Wolff invites Steve Bannon and Roger Ailes to a private dinner at his house in New York City, or his apartment, and then takes notes on what they said. And it's amazing. So there's the Bolton exchange, there's exchange about how they both think Donald Trump is not capable. This is January 3rd. He hasn't even taken office yet. He's won. This is the transition. They're trying to figure out who's in the cabinet. And both Roger Ailes, who ran Fox News, and Steve Bannon are talking openly about how stupid the president is. And they're like, and Ailes keeps asking him, do you think he understands the implications of moving our embassy to Jerusalem in the case of Israel? And they joke around about like, what does he understand? He doesn't understand anything. Don't worry, we'll do it anyway. And by the way, as you saw in the news recently, they did. They moved our embassy to Jerusalem. And does Trump understand the implications? Of course not. But the really interesting part was about Russia and Vladimir Putin. So Ailes asks Bannon, what has he gotten himself into with the Russians? And Bannon says, well, he says he mostly understands, and he says he went to Russia and he thought he was going to meet Putin, but Putin couldn't give a shit about him, so he kept trying. Okay, so Trump, apparently, I don't know when this happened, so this is very interesting. Apparently, Trump is chasing Putin around, like, oh, please, please, Vladimir, meet with me. Please be my friend. And now, there's, of course, also the quotes that we shared with you yesterday that Bannon said, this is all about the money laundering. This is exactly what we've been saying on the show for close to a year now. And Mueller is now investigating money laundering, and he's in Trump's Deutsche Bank account. and perhaps Kushner's as well. So, and Trump has decades-long history of doing a lot of financial deals with Russian oligarchs. Both of his sons have admitted that they've gotten hundreds of millions of dollars from the Russians. Eric Trump, that idiot, told a reporter, "Oh no, it's okay. They gave us hundreds of millions of dollars for our golf courses because they really, really like golf." Okay. So then Bannon asks Ailes, "Hey, he keeps talking to Rupert Murdoch. Can you figure out what's going on with Murdoch and get Murdoch to influence him in the right way? Because Murdoch was the owner of Fox News." Now at this point, Murdoch and Ailes have had a falling out. So Ailes says, "I'll call him," but Trump, quote, "Trump would just jump through hoops for Rupert, like for Putin, sucks up and shits down. I just worry about who's jerking whose chain." See, that is a huge quote right there. First of all, the first part is important about Trump's character, but we largely knew that about him. He pretends to be an alpha male and he goes around, "Oh yeah, I'm the strongest, I'm the best, I have the best words," right? But when he's in the room with someone who's actually his boss, he cowers. And even Ailes, who ran Fox News, clearly saw that. Rupert is actually a rich person as opposed to Donald Trump. So when he's in the room with Rupert Murdoch, he says, "Oh yes, Rupert, sure, Rupert, yes, certainly." He becomes reek. And then with Putin, why? Why with Putin? Why does he suck up to Putin in Ailes' words? Okay, and then he says, "Who's jerking whose chain?" Even the guy who ran Fox News is wondering, what the hell is going on here? Why is Trump taking orders from Putin? Why is he following him around sheepishly like this? What is going on? So of course, when this hits, the Trump administration put aside all the massively damaging things from the book. They're like, "This was definitely not true. Definitely not true. I don't know why they're saying this. No, 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 no." In other words, that's what we're actually concerned about. So then they ask around, and you know who steps up is Janice Min. She is actually co-president of Hollywood Reporter, which is what Michael Wolff works for. So, and he's put parts of the book up on Hollywood Reporter. Janice Min on Twitter confirmed, let's put it up here. She said, "So I was one of the six guests at the Bannon Ailes dinner party in January 2017. And every word I've seen from the book about it is absolutely accurate. It was an astonishing night." So there you have it, guys. Internally, all the leaders of the conservative movement, one, of course, knew what kind of guy Trump was, both with the lack of intellect, not knowing anything that's going on, sucking up to people in power, but mainly they were concerned, why does he keep trying to appeal to and almost take orders from Vladimir Putin? They all knew it. They knew it from day one, even before he took office. Tick, 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 tick. Mueller's in his bank account and he's got his tax returns. See you, wouldn't want to be you. All right, we got to take a quick break here. I haven't even gotten to the best part. Wait till you see the conservative reaction to Bannon. If you don't literally LOL in the next segment, I'll be very surprised. Okay, we'll come right back. Thanks for listening to this podcast. You're only halfway through, so hold, stay right here. Just want to remind you, if you want to get all five segments of the Young Turks commercial free, these are just two of them. Every day we do it. So go to tytnetwork.com/join and you'll get the whole five segments, 2 hours, ad free. Do it now. All right, back on the Young Turks. I am Sock writes in, "Thank you, Jeff Sessions, for giving every Democrat running a ridiculously easy platform to run on. I bet this actually hastens federal legalized marijuana." I only wish you were right. So I've talked to a lot of the Just Democrat candidates. They don't take corporate PAC money. And I've interviewed a lot of them on Rebel Headquarters, and you can see that on youtube.com/TYTpolitics. And they're all, I think almost all of them, all the ones I talk to, are for legalization and for criminal justice reform. But a lot of the establishment Democrats are scared of this topic.
They're scared. What aren't they scared of, though? They're scared of everything.
They think, oh, don't run on that. Don't run on that. That's just for the kids. That's for the kids. And they don't vote anyway. Kids don't vote, right? 64% of Americans want to legalize. No, not good enough for a lot of the corporate Democrats. Oh, you know, now the Republicans have switched. And that goes to Zeiss Cube's tweet. The Republican senator from Colorado is pissed. It's true. Cory Gardner is his name. That's how much money is in the cannabis industry. Republicans won't give it up now either. I know. Now Cory Gardner and some of the guys, he's probably taking donations from some of the companies that are making a ton of money in Colorado. I don't know. To be fair, I don't know. Okay. And by the way, on TYT Politics, Emma's doing a great job of also breaking down who all of these senators' donors are. So then you know who they're in the pocket of, right? So while they're doing that, the Democrats are still like, oh, I don't know, we shouldn't run on marijuana. That's like a little topic, and we're going to get ridiculed by the Republicans, and Jeff Sessions is against it. Ay, 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 they drive me crazy. All right, guys, so we're about to do some more fun stories about the Michael Wolff book. But if you missed the earlier part of the show, become a member, because you got to see the story on how conservatives reacted to the Steve Bannon Donald Trump fight.
So good.
That was so awesome.
Hannity hyperventilating is always fun.
So tytnetwork.com/join to become a member and podcast the show whenever you want with no ads. All right, what's next, Anna?
We have more revelations from Michael Wolff's book, Fire and Fury. It hasn't been released yet, but we are hearing about more and more excerpts. And one of the more recent excerpts that has been covered has to do with Hope Hicks, the communications director in the Trump administration, and her on-again, off-again relationship with Corey Lewandowski. Now, apparently, during the campaign, there was a time when Hicks was very concerned with the way the press was talking about Lewandowski, and she pondered out loud what she could do to help. Now, let me give you the exact portion of the book and what it says about this whole situation. Hicks sat in Trump Tower with Trump and his sons, worried about Lewandowski's treatment in the press and wondering aloud how she might help him. Trump, who otherwise seemed to treat Hicks in a protective and even paternal way, looked up and said, "Why? You've already done enough for him. You're the best piece of tail he'll ever have," sending Hicks running from the room.
Okay, so I think the context of this makes it even worse, because Hope Hicks is one of Trump's closest confidants. And the book explains, and other reports had already shown this, that Hope is one of the few people he trusts and that listens to him and that is a comforting voice and that tells him you're right and hey, here's how we can fight back, and sometimes talks him out of bad ideas. Now, does that mean I like Hope Hicks? No, I don't want people consoling Donald Trump or helping them, and so she's a right winger who is, you know, in this camp. So I got no interest in protecting her overall. But she's a human being and she's there for you throughout all of this stuff. And she trusts in you. And in another part of the book, they talk about, since Melania is completely absent from the White House. Now, I don't know that this is the right way to frame it, but it's what it says in the book. That Ivanka has become the actual wife and Hope Hicks has become the actual daughter. Now, I'm uncomfortable with that framing, but that's what insiders are saying about the Trump White House. But it's relevant in this case because that's how close they are. Mm-hmm. And he still says, oh, you're the best piece of tail you ever got.
Yeah, he, you know, minimizes her to a piece of tail. It doesn't surprise me. What is more surprising to me, because of my own mindset and the way that I would handle a situation like that, is just this weird complicit behavior and this acceptance of his statements, his rhetoric, you know, his degradation of women. I mean, I don't know. Maybe she did call him out. Maybe she aggressively did so and we're just unaware of it. But I just feel like, you know, and I hate to, you know, put you in this context, but just to give you an example, if you ever talk to me like that, ever, like, first of all, you've never even come close. But if you ever did, like, done, that means that you see me as nothing more than a piece of tail. It makes me feel like an object, and I don't want to work for someone or be consoling someone who sees me that way. And so I wish more right-wing women would speak out against this type of rhetoric. Even if you support his policy ideas, even if you agree with his ideology, at least push back on this, because you're better than that. You're worth more than that.
So now, one of Trump's supporters, of course, jumps in and says that the president frequently curses and uses off-color sayings. No, that's not the issue here. Nobody's getting on anybody for cursing or for even making off-color jokes that aren't personal like this. So it's that distinction, I hate the way they blur that line. Mm-hmm. So the Access Hollywood tape, it wasn't that he talked about genitalia, it wasn't that he cursed or that he was joking. It's that he said, no, I physically grabbed them, I grabbed their genitalia, and I don't ask for permission. That was the issue, not the language, not the cursing, not any of that.
Right?
And even in this case, I mean, look, people disagree about this, and I don't want to get into all the different lines, but if he was making a joke about tail or whatever and Hope is comfortable with it, that's between them and I'm not going to judge. But when he's joking, when he says it about her and she's obviously uncomfortable, she ran out of the room. Like, if you can't see that that's an issue, then you're never going to see it.
So there are more portions of his book, Michael Wolff's book, that I want to get to. This is probably the biggest doozy in my rundown, so let's get to it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Michael Wolff's book, Fire and Fury, includes a portion that was recently tweeted about by Katie Torr on MSNBC. It had to do with how far Donald Trump was willing to go to bed his friends' wives. And he actually used, according to Michael Wolff's account, his secretary in order to make these sexual rendezvous come to fruition. So according to the book, Trump liked to say that one of the things that made life worth living was getting your friends' wives into bed.
Let's just pause there to just soak in what a terrible human being he is. I mean, a lot of his defenders will go, I mean, he's just a bro, man. He's just doing locker room talk. No. It's not just talk. And if you knew him, he'd try to sleep with your wife. And if you're into that, okay, I know there's a word for that.
Yeah.
Right?
And, I mean, it's a legitimate fetish. Like some guys like to be cucks. Like, that's really what they want to do.
Yeah.
And that, do you, boo? Do you, boo?
And I remember when he pulled a guy on stage once during the campaign, and then he said, oh, your wife is hot. Maybe she'd prefer. And he was dressed like Donald Trump, the mm-hmm. fan was, and he's like, maybe she'd like the real deal instead. But look, he was your fan. So, and I know that some of the MAGA guys are like, yeah, he's a real guy. Okay, but if he was your friend, he would also try to sleep with your wife. And now, if you think that's no big deal, first of all, you're a weird, weird person.
Right.
Right? I mean, isn't that the biggest bro rule there is, that don't mess with each other's girlfriends and wives?
I don't think we know any of the bro rules, to be fair.
I don't think
I want to know the bro rules. But here's the thing, okay? It's one thing if Trump was like this suave, sexy, cool guy, and then wives ended up cheating on their husbands because they were so attracted to Trump. But that's not what was happening. He was a conniving, sneaky, terrible little shit that did horrible things in order to, you know, convince the wives to sleep with him. So let me give you the details on that, okay? So in pursuing a friend's wife, he would try to persuade the wife that her husband was perhaps not what she thought. Then he'd have his secretary ask the friend into his office. Once the friend arrived, Trump would engage in what was for him more or less constant sexual banter. So, for example, he would say to the husband in the room, okay, you must have had a better expletive than your wife. Tell me about it. I have girls coming in from Los Angeles at 3:00. We can go upstairs and have a great time, I promise. By the way, all the while, Trump would have his friend's wife on the speakerphone listening in on their conversation.
Oh, he's such a bad guy. Wow. Can you imagine if someone in your personal life did that? I mean, if a coworker did that to you, how much would you hate them? But if it turned out it was one of your best friends who tried to ambush you like that, so not only so that your wife would hate you and divorce you, but so that he could have sex with your wife. I mean, that is on a scale 1 to 10 of bad, that's an 11, that's 110. Wow.
I feel like a lot of his behavior is, it stems from insecurity, right? And look, everything that he says, everything that he does reeks of insecurity. It's about proving that he can get the women, proving that he is attractive, proving that he has, you know, a decent sized, you know, area
button.
Down there, button, exactly. Like everything he does stems from insecurity. Like he is the ultimate example of daddy issues, right? Because his dad was constantly disappointed in him. And I know that that's tough on men. That's tough on people in general, right? And I feel like his entire life has been about proving to everyone that he's great, that he's smart, that he's attractive, that he's rich, that he's this, that he's that. And trying to sleep with the wives, for me, like I don't think that he's like some crazed sex maniac. I think it was about proving to himself that he can get the wives to cheat on their husbands and sleep with him.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
I just look, of all the revelations in the book and all the things we've covered in all these years, are there things that are worse for the country? Of course, right? There's policies that he's done that are despicable, gutting the environment, being against all those different racial groups, the genders. Then there's the you know, perhaps working with Putin, which is you get find out more about in this book. But in terms of who he is, his moral character, whether you're in the left wing, the right wing, or the middle, it doesn't matter. And you look at that story, and it just doesn't get any worse than that. Right? If you see that story and you still think he's a good guy, there's something really, really wrong with you.
Switching gears to a completely different topic, we have an update on a story that was covered recently on TYT, and it's an important update to talk about. Recently, there was cold-blooded murders that occurred in Virginia, and they were carried out by a 17-year-old by the name of Nicholas Giampa. Now, he had shot and killed a couple who had encouraged their teenage daughter to stop seeing him because they were alarmed by Nazi propaganda that he was posting all over social media. So once he found out that the daughter was advised to not see him anymore, he decided to show up to their home and gun them down. Now, he tried to shoot himself. He did shoot himself, but he did not die. He is in critical condition. And if he survives the gunshot wound, then he is going to be tried as a minor, which is interesting. Now, let me give you more details. Huffington posted an investigation of the content that he had posted on social media, and it's pretty alarming, but to be quite honest with you, it's commonplace on platforms like Twitter these days. So by November, according to Huffington Post, under his Twitter pseudonym, he was referring to himself as a Nazi, okay? So
no, they're just having fun, just fun, ha ha. Pepe the Frog, Nazis, yay, it's so funny.
So he went under the pseudonym Kevin Gallo, and his Twitter account handle was Dr. Pepper 35. So as Dr. Pepper 35, he tweeted about his hatred of transgender people and his admiration for Hitler. He tweeted about using Jews as target practice. His avatar for the Twitter account is currently a skeleton wearing a Nazi SS military hat. By the way, his Twitter account has been suspended. However, the other Twitter accounts that he would regularly retweet that had some of this Nazi propaganda, alive and well. There's tons of this stuff on Twitter as we speak. In the summer of 2016, he told one Twitter user to go back to the gas chamber, called another a kike, and labeled several users whom he disagreed with as cucks. He talked about globalist scum and a few weeks later referred to a right-wing conspiracy theory about how Hillary has literally murdered people.
Let's note the irony there. This guy actually did murder people. These two innocent parents that were trying to protect their daughter. The story is so heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. It's incredibly heartbreaking. So there's more. By the way, I can't go through everything that he's posted. I'm just giving you a snapshot of some of the content that was on there. He also wrote, this is what he said. I'm reading it verbatim. I've already talked one tranny into suicide, and I'm working on another two. With a smiley face. Then he posted a rainbow lynching image encouraging gay and transgender people to commit suicide with the hashtag trans rights are human rights is an oxymoron because trannies aren't people.
So this guy obviously has deep-seated issues. There was a poster on a college campus a little while back encouraging LGBT students to kill themselves, commit suicide, and it had the stats on how that community commits suicide at greater rates, and they're like, keep going. And we were told at the time, it's just, as we are every time, the cucks and the Nazis, and they're just trolls. They're just young kids having a good time, like trying to talk other people into killing themselves and making them feel miserable. It's so much fun. They're just trolls until they go and actually murder people.
Right. And he had already taken some action before he had gunned down this couple. So I want to get to all of that. I want to give you all of the, relevant stuff that was found. So throughout his Twitter feed, he expressed concern that white men were at risk of losing their access to guns. By late November, he was actively advocating violence. He tweeted on November 20th that Charles Manson, who had died a day earlier, did the right thing. On Thanksgiving Day, he advocated shooting transgender and Jewish people. The images I'm about to show you are disgusting, but it gives you an example of the type of content he regularly retweeted. By the way, these accounts that he retweeted are still in existence, no problems whatsoever. At least Twitter doesn't seem to have any problems with them. So let's just go.
Free speech. He's just talking. I mean, he's advocating violence in those, and then he actually did the violence, but free speech.
And then finally, he also mowed a 40-foot swastika into the grass of a community field in his neighborhood. But, who would need to investigate that guy, right? He's not a problem. And by the way, he's 17. He's going to be tried as a minor.
You know how many 12-year-old black kids are trying as adults? Oh, but they're black, so hey, 12-year-old blacks might as well be an adult. I mean, the gangs and all this stuff. This guy's a Nazi. He murdered two innocent people. He's 70. A poor kid. He's a kid. If you're black, you're not a kid. If you're white, you're a kid. If a Muslim went on and posted the same exact thing about using Jews as target practice, you think he's not getting a call from the FBI? And he should. Goddamn right he should. Talking about, these Christians better not taking away my guns. As a Muslim, I'm about to do violence, and I'm going to go kill all these people. For God's sake, go investigate. What are you doing, right? Oh, he's a white Nazi. Oh, wow, just having fun.
But what's interesting is, okay, so some might argue, it's just posts on social media. You see a ton of these posts. How do you know who to investigate? Why would you waste your time? You never know, right? But there is precedent involving individuals getting arrested and serving time in jail for what they post on social media. So there was an example of a guy who had posted heavy metal lyrics on his Facebook page. He got arrested for that, okay? Now, luckily, he didn't spend much time in jail, but there were two individuals who were arrested in 2014 for sharing rap lyrics on Facebook, and they spent 7 months behind bars because they couldn't afford the bail necessary to get out. And then when they finally were able to pay the bail and get out 7 months later, they had to do their own investigation to prove that they weren't dangerous individuals. So let me give you details on that. Let's go to graphic 88. Huh, what a coinkydink. Aaron Harvey and Brandon Duncan, both of them were arrested in 2014 for writing rap lyrics on Facebook.
free speech for Nazis, jail for black folks who write rap.
Right. They were arrested in San Diego, California, and the police found some obscure law in order to justify arresting them. By the way, a judge eventually threw out the case, but the law police arrested them on was Penal Code 182.5, which notes gang members with general knowledge of a gang's criminal activities can be prosecuted for crimes others commit as long as they willfully benefited from, furthered, promoted, or assisted in some way. There was literally no evidence that they were affiliated with a gang or that they knew gang members, no evidence at all. This was completely based on rap lyrics on their Facebook pages, okay? So that will get them arrested. But this Nazi guy who not only writes stuff on Facebook, but literally goes out there and mows a giant swastika in the grass, Why would we investigate that guy?
That penal code might as well be called an excuse to arrest black people. If you happen to live in a neighborhood where there is a gang and that's your neighborhood and there's some guys in the neighborhood that are in gangs. Well, you know them, and by knowing them, we think you further assisted them. Well, were you in a gang? No. I don't care that you weren't in a gang. Did you do anything wrong? No. But you knew a guy and maybe you took a picture with him, right? Or maybe you wrote a rap song about him. That's good enough to arrest you because you're black. Now, how about the Nazi gangs? No, Nazis are not a gang. Black people are in gangs, Nazis are not in gangs, so that penal code does not apply to them. He's a poor little kid. He's a tribe as a kid. He's 17 years old. He gets to murder people. Look,
no, but
do I believe in freedom of speech? Of course, of course. We do a talk show, of course we believe in freedom. But what I want is equal laws, equal justice. I know that some people think that's too much to ask for. So he gets to have freedom of speech, they get to have freedom of speech. If you advocate for violence, that is not freedom of speech. That is outside of the bounds of the First Amendment. You're inciting people to violence. And in his case, the Nazi's case, he actually did the violence.
And I have to end on this one note because this was probably the most outrageous part of all of this. So the father for one of the victims that was gunned down by this Nazi was, of course, at the funeral, and he referred to the Nazi as a deranged adolescent. And guess what? At that moment, the room stiffened. The pastor talked about overcoming hate. A friend of the family said he'd spent the past few days trying to figure out what lesson could be learned from what had happened. But it's like, don't call him a deranged adolescent. We don't like that. The room stiffened. We need to talk about overcoming hate.
Yeah, you write rap. We have no mercy for you. The bond was set at $1.1 million and $500,000 for those two guys. You're a Nazi who murders people. Oh, don't call him deranged. All right, we gotta go, guys. Post game, where there's more excerpts from the book that shows Donald Trump's actually poor. Okay, bye bye. Thanks for watching what I hope was a lovely edition of the Young Turks. Now, you know that is two of the five segments that we do because that's free. We want to have you support independent media and come watch the whole show that we do every day. That's five segments overall, no ads at all. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Come become a member. Thanks for watching either way. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/tyt. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.